Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gankoff coming to you live on RBN on this Friday, November the 15th at 1 p.m. Central Time. Our special guest is Johnny Punish. Johnny Punish, longtime activist at VT Foreign Policy. Johnny Punish, great musician. Johnny Punish, Palestinian. Johnny Punish with an awful lot to say, both in music and in print media and on the air, about what it is that the United States is continuing to support in Gaza and in Palestine and in southern Lebanon and in Syria, and perhaps a major, major question for us here approaching a second Trump presidency. Will Donald Trump allow Benjamin Netanyahu to drag the United States into a war with Iran that may result in World War III? Well, that gets into the whole question of the cabinet choices of Trump. I won't get into all of that with you pick by pick yet. Probably I'll do that next week. But in the meantime, you can look at what I've submitted for VT Foreign Policy. My interview conducted by Iranian Foreign Ministry official Reza Montazami. If you recognize that name, you should, because he goes all the way back to the so-called New Horizon conferences in Iran years ago, where a number of us on the alt-right were invited to those conferences from year to year. In this particular case, Mr. Montazami contacted me after a very, very long time apart to discuss this whole business of what was going on with Trump and the whole issue of war and peace, especially as it pertains to cabinet picks and also this whole business of a potential war between Israel and Iran. That wouldn't be more a question of war between the United States and Iran for Zionist purposes. So with all of this in mind and keeping in mind the cabinet picks as we know them thus far, I'll be ranking them for you next week. But the ones that I like the most are Tulsi Gabbard, simply because John Bolton may be hospitalized by him now in terms of his absolute rage that Ms. Gabbard is suddenly the director of national intelligence. Philip Giraldi has weighed in at the UNS review and has said that it's an excellent pick in terms of having a hope, at least, of engaging in some legitimate reform of an out-of-control intelligence apparatus in the United States. One caveat that I would mention on this, as well as the other pick that I got a big kick out of today, finding out that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be our next director of Health and Human Services. I hope that means that Mr. Kennedy is going to find someone other than Admiral Rachel Levine to be our Undersecretary of Health. But in the meantime, what it does mean is that Big Pharma is not at all pleased with this pick of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Between Robert F. Kennedy Jr., however, and Donald Trump and Tulsi Gabbard lurks a figure that I'm extremely concerned about, however, and that is an individual, yes, many of you know who he is, and that is Rabbi Shmuley Boteach. Rabbi Boteach is a radical Zionist in my view. He, of course, is someone with a lot of links to Shabbat Lubavitch and other shadowy organizations within the Zionist orbit. He is someone who has endorsed Donald Trump, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Tulsi Gabbard, and not recently, but some weeks ago. So we've got to watch this very closely in regard to many other cabinet choices that I will say a lot more about next week in regard to what I really think of these various picks and where it is that we would seem to be going. Even as the world, the Russians in particular, the Iranians in particular, and the Chinese in particular, not to mention all these limp wrists at the EU who are scared for all the right reasons. Nonetheless, when it comes to the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians, they're wondering to what extent there will be any change in a positive direction in a Trump administration. My advice is don't bet on it. Johnny Punish, how are you, sir? What's been going on?
I'm fantastic. How about those new Washington Commanders, man?
Yeah, well, Johnny also handicaps football. He and I did one great Super Bowl show a couple of years ago.
Wait a second. I was talking about the new Washington Commanders for Donald Trump. Who are you talking about, my friend?
Yeah. I was talking about the football team that you falsely handicapped last night. I'm glad I didn't bet. Johnny picked the Washington Commanders, the gridiron version, to beat the Philadelphia Eagles by 2. And, of course, the Commanders, who had the lead for much of the night, ended up losing by 8. So Johnny knows a lot about football, a lot about Bitcoin, a lot about foreign policy, especially things Middle Eastern. He's a great musician, and he's someone who is a great analyst of what is going on in the globe. But don't bet the horses with him every time. As those of you who have sense wouldn't bet on my horses every time either. But at any rate, in terms of the new Washington Commanders, they look like the old Washington Commanders, both the guys that lost on the gridiron last night, as well as all of these allegedly new Commanders who are increasingly looking rather kosher approved. What's your take on that?
Well, look, there's an old song by an old band for your younger listeners who are hearing this. There was a band called The Who, and they wrote a song called We Don't Get Fooled Again. And then one of the lines in the song is, meet the old boss, same as the old boss. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump or Joseph Biden. I'm talking about Zionists. Nothing personal. I've seen this playbook over and over again. Unfortunately, the system is corrupted and has been for decades upon decades. There is literally no signs that I see anywhere that that has changed. In fact, Miriam Adelson, Trump's handler, made it very clear to him that, hey, you're going to be for us. And that's the way it's been going since Eisenhower. So this is nothing new. What we have is just a continuation of Sykes-Picot from 1917 and the Euro colony of Israel expanding itself and doing the final solution for the Palestinians. And Trump said it best, hey, eliminate them. And he's going to give the green light. So you know what? The U.S. has been the bank funder of all this. I've seen this since 1982, since I've been involved as an activist. And unfortunately, I have nothing good to report except that this is serious. We are witnessing ethnic cleansing, the final genocide. It's not new, folks. It's been going on since 1948. My mom, as you know, was a victim of al-Nakba. She was born in Haifa, Palestine, 1939, and was summarily excused from her house by the Euro colonists, the Euro settlers, back in 1948 under the gun. They left to Tyre, Lebanon, thinking they would be there for 3 days, and it's been, 75 years. So this is what's going on, folks, from that perspective. On the bigger picture, it's a lot more bigger than that. There's a control of world resources and control of the world going on. So how I feel about it is I feel bad for Trump voters, okay? I think they had high hopes, and I understand that. With change comes high hopes. He said he's going to fix everything. They believe him, but he's not going to fix nothing. Jared Kushner was supposed to be the fixer. He didn't fix anything except steal money. Nobody's fixing nothing. It's the same old bullshit, Mark. It's the same old bullshit. So I'm not optimistic, my friend.
Yes, and you know, your family story, Johnny, dovetails a great deal with a friend of mine here in San Antonio that I haven't talked to in a while, Jacob Namar, N-A-M-M-A-R. For those of you who don't know who he's a world-famous author. He has authored the book, Born in Jerusalem, Born Palestinian. And his story, as a part of a Roman Catholic family in pre-Zionist Palestine, is a very moving one. It's very moving. It's very informative. I'm amazed at the lack of bitterness in it when one contemplates exactly how bad it has been and continues to be, not only for the Jacob Namars of the world and the Johnny Punishes of the world, but folks, again, we have to look at these statistics just on what has happened since October the 7th last year. And when we start looking at this thing historically, it is amazing what the people of the United States continue to allow their government to use their tax money for, not simply in terms of all of these Israeli organizations that get around being registered under the Foreign Agents Registration Act, but when you start looking not only at the death and destruction that has been brought to the Middle East by this Zionist movement and all of the land theft. But again, and Johnny's aware of much of this history, you look at what the Zionist entity has from time to time done to the people of the United States in regard to the Levant affair. Yes, go ahead, Johnny.
Mark, it's a rape job. Mark, let me tell you something. It's a rape job, okay? The American people have been raped, and they're thanking their rapists for doing it. It's really outrageous, and it's been going on for so long, they don't even know they're being raped. They have no clue, okay? None. It's outrageous, and I understand what's going on. The Zionists are playing both sides, the Democrats and the Republicans, and have been doing so since day one. They pay off everybody. And I'm using the word payoff, or I could use the word bribe, but in Washington, they use the word lobby, and because they've made it legal that you could just pay off people with millions and millions of dollars. AIPAC has handlers for every single congressman, every single one, okay? Let me tell you something. I'm going to give you a story. In 1982, I was vice president of the Arab Student Association at my university. And I stood up, and in those days, we had connections with the PLO, and my professor, Alex O'Day, was just murdered by the JDL. You can look it up.
I remember him well. I remember the incident well. I never met Alex, but I remember the incident well. Yes.
He was my professor of Arab studies. He coached us. He talked to us. And then he was murdered by the JDL in a bomb at Cal State Fullerton in his office in the middle of the day. It killed him and his secretary. And here's what happened. After that, I spoke up in my Palestinian student association, and I said, look, guys, here's what's going on, okay? The Zionists are paying off our congressmen. We need to get groups together and bribe them more than the Zionists. Now, at the time, the PLO was associating itself, aligning itself with the Soviets. I don't know if you remember that, but that was what's going on back in those days, the Soviet Union, which is no longer exists. Okay, so back in those days, I argued that point of view, and I was dismissed because they thought that the strategy should be to align with the Soviets. I said, no, the battle is in the U.S. Congress, guys. Come on. I told them straight up to their face, I said, look, you tell Yasser Arafat, who is Abu Ammar, who is a good guy, who is fighting for justice, take off that damn military uniform, take off that thing off your head, and put a suit and tie on, look like an American, okay? Get your ass over to the Congress and start selling and then paying them off. So if AIPAC gives them $1 million for a congressman, you give them $1.5 million, okay? And then you tell that congressman, return the $1 million back to AIPAC and tell them to shove it, that we're pro-Palestinian now, okay? And that's the way to do this. This is about competition. And a lot of Arabs make the mistake of begging. We want to beg for justice. We want to beg for hope. Hey, please, can you do us a favor and care about us as people? They don't care, dude. These are psychotic predators. I'm telling you, man, I've been doing this for 40 freaking years. I actually fought with Irv Rubin from the JDL face to face. My nose was on his nose. I was spitting at him as he was spitting at me. That prick was murdered after he bombed Alex O'Day. He didn't even last 2 days in the prison. They threw his ass off the balcony. So you know what? I know a lot of shit about this stuff. And I'm telling you, the only way to beat AIPAC and the Zionists is to pay the U.S. government off. You pay Trump off, he'll be singing Muslims and Palestinians are the greatest things in sliced bread. That's the way it goes, my friend. What do you say, Mark?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And next week, I am filming something for VT Foreign Policies, VT Radio, and in TV production with our relatively new editor there. And that will be literally the 61st anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, which, by the way, this year, November 22nd, falls on a Friday, as it did 61 years ago in 1963. Think about that one for a minute, folks. But as we start looking at this whole question of Kennedy and the work that was done by Michael Collins Piper of Final Judgment in particular, there have been a number of other people that have built upon Mike's work and have from time to time published things on this subject on the UNS Review and other alt-right locations. But there's not a doubt in my mind, and I have read not hundreds but thousands of pages related to the Kennedy assassination from every conceivable source, as well as talking to people no longer alive who were in the intelligence community, that I encountered as a young person at educational seminars and so forth, who in some cases would be willing to talk off the record. And I have no doubt in my mind that although there is merit to the claim that the Kennedy assassination had all kinds of people connected to it, organized crime figures in particular who had lost many of their operations in the Cuban Revolution that got rid of Batista and produced Castro, It is not an accident that, of course, some of these figures whose names have come up for many years as having had links to the Kennedy assassination were people with these kinds of backgrounds. But then when you look a little bit further, it only expands. And when you start looking at the expansion of this into Israeli territory, that's when you get into the questions of Meyer Lansky and David Ben-Gurion, their conflict with Kennedy over what Israel was doing with the so-called Dimona desalinization plant that proved to be a weaponizing nuclear operation, folks. Everyone knows that today. After Kennedy's death, the Israelis engaged in the so-called NUMEC theft, N-U-M-E-C, the NUMEC theft at an American nuclear plant in Apollo, Pennsylvania. Benjamin Netanyahu, by the way, was one of the people that was actually in on that operation to steal the raw materials that were necessary for Israel's weaponized nuclear program to really get off the ground. And then when you start looking at the links of some of these people like Meyer Lansky and Jack Ruby, also known as Jacob Rubenstein, folks, the Zionist gunrunner for the Sonneborn Institute here in Texas, which was running guns to the Zionists in the late 1940s. The name Jack Ruby not simply connects to the various mob figures that were involved in things Cuban. And there we get into Sam Giancana and Johnny Roselli, Santos Traficante, potentially Jimmy Hoffa was involved in this. But you start examining all of this, and Jack Ruby, in terms of those connections, it all begins to recede into the background when we consider who he was as Jacob Rubenstein. That's just the beginning of what's in Piper's book. But when you look at this, Johnny, I'm convinced that at the very top of the pyramid of players who were involved in the murder of the 35th president of the United States almost 61 years ago. Again, the anniversary is 1 week from today. When you look at that issue, the thing that is striking to me, I believe the Dimona nuclear power plant, later the NUMEC theft operation, were at the center of the reason to take Kennedy out. The other thing was that both John Kennedy and his brother Robert Kennedy sought to take the so-called American Zionist Council, which was the forerunner to AIPAC, folks. The American Zionist Council, the Kennedys were trying to bring that into the issue of the Foreign Agents Registration Act to recognize that this is a foreign lobby operating within the United States. The fact that that's Eddie Arnold singing July, You're a Woman. I'll conclude my remarks on this Israeli link to the Kennedy assassination. Get back to Johnny Punish with some of his ideas as to what we do in the midst of this stacked deck that has been dealt. Stay tuned.
Got a little interference from you there. What'd you say, Mark?
No, we're fine.
Okay, good. Okay, very good. You know what? Corruption has been...
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. But I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Health Simple with Colorado Shielji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit, that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
An old cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw. Yippee-yi-yay, were still on fire and their hooves made of steel. Their horns was black and shiny and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-yay,
riders in the sky.
Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught them yet.
We are back. You're listening to the Dan Koff Report on RBN Live on this Friday, the 15th of November, 2024. We began at 1 p.m. Central Time with Johnny Punish. I'll say more about the Kennedy issue again on the 61st anniversary next week, but suffice it to say that if you haven't purchased one, the UNS Review has been kind enough to list the entire text of Michael Collins Piper's book, Final Judgment. Avail yourselves of that if you've not had a chance to read the manuscript for itself. It is quite a volume. And as one who has read literally thousands of pages on the Kennedy assassination, I've talked to a lot of people about it over the years. My own father was in Air Force intelligence when this happened. We chatted about it several times before the end of his life. The Piper book will not disappoint you in terms of adding significant information on who was really involved in this at the top of the pyramid. Now, we've been discussing this whole situation of the cabinet picks, the whole situation with the Middle East, with Johnny Punish. Johnny, let me ask you this question. Philip Giraldi, Dr. Philip Giraldi, very decent man. I respect him a lot. He's been on my show a couple of times in the very distant past. He's the head of the Council for the National Interest. He is decidedly opposed to what the Israeli lobby and the Zionist movement have been doing. He is an ex-CIA station chief in a couple of different countries. The list of his accomplishments just goes on. But this article that he wrote today on Tulsi Gabbard, who, of course, as many of you know, was a Democratic congresswoman from Hawaii, a U.S. military veteran, someone who was generally a critic of these unending wars and of the neoconservative foreign policy. Her appointment by Trump to be the head of National Intelligence, the Director of National Intelligence, has sent the Cheneys and has sent John Bolton into orbit. And yet, in terms of the interview that Dr. Giraldi gave to Sputnik, the Russian Sputnik publication on this whole subject, Sputnik was recounting a series of positions that Tulsi Gabbard has advocated over the years that coincide with my own in many situations with these discretionary wars that have wasted untold trillions of dollars and thousands upon thousands, ultimately millions of lives around the world. That's all very good, but Sputnik then manages to insert what would appear to be a caveat. She has historically been pro-Israel, and that, of course, accentuates what I said earlier about the fact that Rabbi Shmuley Boteach endorses both Gabbard and RFK Jr. in terms of being a part of a Trump administration. Johnny, is this historic pro-Israel position of Tulsi Gabbard fatal to Philip Giraldi's arguments? Otherwise, can we expect that even if she attempts to be something of what she has been in the past in regard to her public policy positions, is the pro-Israel connection historically a reason to yes? We'll get back to this after our second break. But
we'll answer on the second break, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I assume we're on a break. Oh.
Okay, very good.
Oh, gotcha.
We'll
okay.
break we'll break again shortly in 60 seconds, but I just want to say to Johnny, you'll probably have to feel this right after the break, just go right into the answer. Is Gabbard's historic pro-Israel position fatal to a positive review from us on her candidacy to be the national director of or the director of national intelligence? Will she basically, and Trump as well, fold into the predictable positions of people like Marco Rubio, a disastrous choice for Secretary of State, in Netanyahu's plans for an American war with Iran? We'll have Johnny answer that one when we come back. You're listening to Eddie Arnold, Make the World Go Away, and I wish Eddie was still here to sing us into a better state of mind as we contemplate a world that's very much in front of us. We'll be back with Johnny Funnies.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
People often write to tell us What has happened for them since starting Extendivite? Allow me to read a few. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after exercise. It's amazing, and I ordered my second bottle. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. So far, a great product is what it claims to be. Great product. A few days in, and I could feel a difference for certain. Not checking medical stats yet. I know this is really working by how I feel. We'll continue to take this product. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Make the world go away and get off my shoulders. Say the things you used to say.
You are back. You are listening to the Dan Koff Report live coming from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have the legendary Johnny Punish with us. Johnny Punish, Palestinian. Johnny Punish, musician. Johnny Punish, longtime guru at VT Foreign Policy. Johnny Punish involved in so many different areas of life. We have posted on the roadmap, by the way, some information on Johnny that he sent to me some time back that really begins to get into all the different facets of his life in terms of his biography. So be sure to avail yourself of that. Johnny, before the second break, we were just starting to get into this whole business of Tulsi Gabbard, the anti-Zionist, anti-Israeli lobby. Dr. Philip Giraldi, longtime CIA station chief in a couple of different countries, head of the National Council for the National Interest. He is largely positive on this Tulsi Gabbard nomination to be the director of national intelligence. I basically feel the same way to a point, especially when I see Bolton and the Cheneys going berserk over this. But given the fact, and Sputnik, which interviewed Dr. Giraldi, did mention this, you look at her historic positions on a variety of different subjects, she looks excellent. And I certainly have a lot of regard for her, but she's pro-Israel. Is that the disqualifying factor in feeling very good even about this appointment? Would she acquiesce? Would Trump acquiesce to Netanyahu in getting this country involved in a war with Iran? What do you think?
In my view, absolutely. I think good intentions, people always go to Foggy Bottom, Washington, D.C., with good intentions. A lot of people have good ideas, but what it comes down to is corruption and force. In other words, if you don't do what they say, then you get John F. Kennedy. So Tulsi Gabbard may have some good intentions, but at the end of the day, if she doesn't bend over for the Israeli lobby, for the Zionist, then it's end of story. She'll be washed up, and that'll be the end of that story. They control Trump. They control her. She'll go in and do some good things, but that's about it. If she crosses the line, forget about it. There's no way. I've seen this for 40 years already. There's no way these people let nothing like that go. It will not happen. They will get what they want. They will ethnically cleanse the Palestinians. They will continue to push them out of the way. They will wage war against Iran. They will get what they want. I believe it's coming. It's a clear path to control of Iran. They want it. They want control of those resources. And end of story. That's my opinion about it. Like I said, Tulsi seems like a nice lady. I don't know if she knows what she's getting herself into, but she's walking into the belly of the beast, and it's not going to be pretty, my friend.
Well, that's my reading of the whole thing, too. And, you know, one of the things that was striking to me, Dmitry Medvedev of Russia, who is, of course, the head, he's like the deputy director now of their so-called Security Council. He was the president of Russia in between Putin administrations. Medvedev, and I saw him make this remark on tape, and of course they provided the English subtitles. He was speaking about the Russian-Ukrainian war. I don't remember the exact wording of the question, but basically Mr. Medvedev was asked if he thought Trump was sincere in wanting to bring the Ukrainian war to an end. And Medvedev basically said that in the event that Trump proves to be sincere in regard to bringing that war to an end, a legitimate end in terms of getting rid of this Project Ukraine mentality completely and letting the whole thing just go down the tube, Medvedev made reference to JFK. And he said if Trump really makes an honest effort to end this conflict, and I think what he was strongly implying was ends this conflict with legitimate conditions for the end of the war, that he could end up in another Dealey Plaza situation. That was striking to me that Medvedev was that candid. He said Trump really wants to end this thing and stop this NATO nonsense and stop the EU and stop this Russophobia and regime change and all this other stuff. They'll kill him. That's basically what he was saying.
Well, you know what? That happens in Washington, D.C., my friend. It's happened before. It'll happen in the future. If you don't bend over to the will of the power, those things do happen. One way or the other, you get pushed out or washed out or X'd out. And that's the way it goes. Who I feel bad for is the American voter. The American voter doesn't want all this war and all this money to Israel and all these billions to Ukraine. They don't want any of that. Nobody does. They want lower prices. They want cheaper eggs. They want better services for their families. And they're not going to get it, my friend. They're just not going to get it. They're going to get higher inflation, higher prices, and more war. I know for a fact because we're also a military family, and I know that some of my family have already been told in the military that be ready. So they're already getting ready for it. They've been doing this for about 6 months, and they're only ready to go. So, Ian, I don't like what I see on the horizon. Of course, I hope it doesn't happen. Nobody does. But the forces of power and profiteering are inching that way. I think we're looking at a Middle East bigger war. And I think in Ukraine, I'm not 100% sure what's going to happen in Ukraine. I'm actually referring to you, Mark, on that, because I think, Mark, you're more attuned to the Ukraine issue than I am, being involved with the religious end of it as well. So maybe you can speak to that.
Well, as I think about this Russian-Ukrainian war, it's very clear that Russia is holding all of the cards, folks. If you look at the whole line of conflict, which is what, something like 900 to 1,000 kilometers long, going from Kharkiv all the way down to the Kherson and Zaporozhye regions. That line of conflict, as well as what is happening with this Ukrainian incursion into the Kursk region of Russia, that Russia is simply beating these people senseless in regard to the incredible daily losses, in regard to the destruction of Western-provided armaments. These airstrikes that are taking place in the so-called rear of Ukraine, airstrikes throughout the country, so that whether you're looking at Kiev or you're looking at Odessa or you're looking at Khmelnytsky or any of these other places, the nightly bombings that Russia's undertaking to destroy logistics depots, to destroy factories, to destroy armaments caches, to destroy areas that have any sort of military significance whatsoever. They're laying it to them every night. It kind of reminds me somewhat of what was going on in Germany in the last 6 months of World War II, or what Curtis LeMay was enacting in the final months of the American campaign with Japan. I can't believe, just watching many of these videos and so forth, things I just, it just brings to the fore. You can read about these totals and these results from these various strikes. But when you see, whether you're talking about the daily advances in kilometers of the Russians, the Russian foot soldiers all along the line of conflict, or you're looking at the videos of these airstrikes, it's something to behold. So on the one hand, Trump cannot possibly believe, I wouldn't think, that the United States should stick its nose in this at all, having been the basic instigator of the problem from the beginning, by the way, folks. But then you get into this whole issue of the Ukrainian war, given the Zionist pressure on Trump to do Netanyahu's bidding in a preemptive war with Iran, which would be a catastrophe, folks. It would be a moral catastrophe. It would be a political and military catastrophe, too, in terms of the fact that other major players would react to such an action. And I'm referring to Russia, I'm referring to China. But when you look at this whole issue, the thing that disturbs me the most about some of these Trump picks for his cabinet, who seem to finally recognize that this Ukraine operation is a total loser, that the United States needs to declare some sort of victory and get out of there, their chief emphasis in doing so is to pivot toward a military conflict with China in the South China Sea and over Taiwan. Now, to me, just thinking about that, this is complete lunacy that we should be involved in a 60% tariff war with China, that we should engage China militarily. This is, to me, folks, this, I could give you 10 reasons why this is crazy. Just trust me, it's crazy. And then that assumes that an action of that type, that Russia would simply stay out of that type of a conflict between the United States and China, or that Russia would fail to come to Iran's aid in some significant fashion if Netanyahu were to prod the United States into a preemptive attack on Tehran. To me, this is where you look at any of these Trump selections, whether you're talking about someone who looks good as a director of national intelligence, who's still pro-Israel. That's a major thing with me, folks. When you start talking about getting a global war started, that's danger number one. And then number two, for the people in a future Trump administration who are saying a lot of the right things now on Ukraine, these were many people like Rubio who were all for this war in the beginning, folks. Both Rubio. In terms, yeah.
Wait, what's his name? Marco Rubio? Marco, or is it Marco? I forgot which one.
Marco Rubio.
Yeah, Marco. It's not Narco.
Yeah, it's Narco. Yeah, it's got to be Narco. That's probably why he likes Zelensky so much, as they trade white powder, right?
Right. Well, his brother's a freaking drug dealer. Has been trafficking millions and millions of dollars in drugs, and Narco wants to invade Mexico, saying he wants to go after the cartels. I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, this guy's a weirdo, man.
Yeah, I know a lot of things about him. None, absolutely none of which are good. I think various foreign news sources, including foreign social media that I monitor, are all horrified by this pick. And so what does it come down to, Johnny? A situation where, well, Netanyahu presumably should be able to drag the United States into a conflict with Iran that would ignite a global war. And then all of the people that previously were supporting this war between Russia and Ukraine on the Ukrainian side of the aisle, who are basically neocons, while they're suddenly saying the right things about pulling out of that, it seems to be chiefly because they want to emphasize a war with Iran and the possible, perhaps even probable, need to go to war with China in their minds. I mean, when the United States military is producing studies that indicate that we should be ready to fight China by 2027, this to me is straight out of this is straight out of the psycho office. I mean, this is just absolutely incredible to me.
Talk about destructive. Are you kidding me? They're freaking dreaming, dude. We don't ever want to fight China. China doesn't want to fight the United States either. It's the dumbest thing you ever heard. And if they do it, we're all going to get hurt. And that's not good for anybody.
Well, that's right. I mean, if you start talking about a 60% tariff on Chinese goods, and you start talking about the ongoing deployment of a U.S. naval presence that is clearly designed to start restricting Chinese movements in the South China Sea and anywhere near Taiwan. And, of course, the United States seems to be buttressing things with the Philippines in regard to military deployments that look a lot like the ones that were going on in the Cold War. You watch all of this, and then you consider how badly the United States military has performed, folks, in the last 23, 24 years. The money that's been wasted, the fiat money that has been printed and wasted, the issue with trade deficits, the issue with inflation, and what I think is going to end up in a stagflation situation for the United States. You're talking about a global movement toward de-dollarization of the world economy, thanks to this Russian-Ukrainian war, right? And the renaissance not only of the Russian-Chinese relationship, but the Russian-Chinese relationship with the global South and many people who have never liked the United States or its foreign policy. And then look at this staggering comparison of Russia, just Russia alone, as an industrial military production power with that of the United States, which at one time was the unquestioned power of the world in regard to industrial production and industrial military production. Russia produces more for this, folks, than the United States and the EU combined, according to three or four experts I could cite here. And then if you want to add to that the fact that China is now the leading manufacturing juggernaut in the world, do we really believe, on top of their population, on top of their incredible advances in military technology in my lifetime, not to mention what the Russians have done under Putin in the last quarter of a century, do we really believe that an American military that couldn't stay the course in Afghanistan is suddenly going to take on Iran and Russia and China simultaneously? This, to me, is nut house material. I mean, it's not only... Yeah, I mean, so looking at it from that vantage point, I'm struck by the number of alt-right conservatives that I know who want to reduce the influence and power of governmental intrusion in our lives. And yet, when you start looking at the foreign policy area, this is precisely where this argument falls apart for me, because in terms of the American surveillance state, domestically and otherwise, in terms of grotesque levels of military spending that are only going to worsen in this new environment with Trump, you start talking about
an increased debt that's unbelievably a number that we can't even fathom. It's crazy, man, crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy, and the national sovereign debt is now $36 trillion. And when you start looking at the prognosis for increases, major increases in American military spending, not to mention issues of trying to shore up Social Security and Medicare, the fact is that the national sovereign debt, folks, now at $36 trillion, what is it going to be next year? Next year, I've seen statistics that would suggest that we're probably going to be looking at another $1.8 trillion added to the national sovereign debt in the first 12 months of a Trump administration. But then when you start talking about the money that's not going to be spent on reestablishing our industrial base, our industrial manufacturing base in this country, when you start talking about this whole issue of what we do with our physical infrastructure and rebuilding that, you start talking about issues of education, right? You start talking about all of the things that the United States was once the envy of the world over, where we've just gone absolutely to seed. And to me, Johnny, it was said best by a guy standing in front of me in the line for early voting on the very first day of early voting here in Texas, and he had a T-shirt, and I put it on Russian V. Kontakta, the back of his shirt. And the guy's about my age, maybe a little older, and the back of the shirt says in big letters, "I'm old enough to remember America before it went to shit." That's basically it. It's like, you know, with all the articles I read, all the shows I listen to, all these important people I talk to from time to time who put a lot of data into my head to just try and ruminate over, that shirt for me was a 10-second glance at absolute truth. And that's why I'm so disturbed. Yes.
Let me interject here for a second. I was just in Egypt in January, and for those of you that don't know or not aware, that the Egyptian dollar devalued about 90%. The people there are poor and starving. It was outrageous. I was there to try to get into Palestine through the Rafah Gate. Of course, that was right at the beginning of the genocide, this new genocide, this new ethnic cleansing, this continued ethnic cleansing. I couldn't get into Rafah, obviously. I was prevented. So I stayed in Egypt for about a month, and it was horrific. The people there are starving. You got professors driving cabs and begging for money. It's run by a dictatorship. Let me tell you something. The reason I'm telling you this is because Americans don't realize this, that if this goes bad, your currency is going to get devalued even worse than it's getting devalued, and you may end up in the situation where you're starving too. And it's not that far to go that way. And to think that'll never happen is outrageous. I can tell you right now, I do a lot of homework and studying and research for Bitcoin. I've been a proponent for Bitcoin, as you probably know, since 2013. As you probably heard, the Bitcoin price has gone through the roof. And why? Billionaires are flocking to Bitcoin. They're buying Bitcoin on the exchanges. They're buying Bitcoin through BlackRock, on Charles Schwab, and all the other brokerage houses. Why is that happening? And why is gold, they're running away from gold? It's gone down, gold. Because they don't believe that the future is going to be the U.S. dollar. They're taking their U.S. dollars and selling them for Bitcoin. So this is really important to pay attention to, folks. Now, I'm an investor in Bitcoin. I'm going to be fine, but I'm outside the United States, and I'm never going to go back there. Nothing personal towards anybody listening to this, but I don't want to live anywhere in the United States when this shit hits the fan. No, thank you.
Well, I think you're exactly right, and this is what I anticipate. And this gets into maybe the last question for the hour. I guess we got about 6 minutes to go here, Johnny. When you start looking about the development of BRICS and de-dollarization, the astronomical rise in the worth of Bitcoin, the situation where other economies that have been dollar-based and that have been largely involved in, at least in some general sort of way, supportive of the Bretton Woods foreign policy of the United States since the end of World War II, when all of this goes in the way that you saw it in Egypt, and I believe that that's exactly what's going to happen once the United States, if in fact it is dragged into the conflict that you and I are fearful of, it's going to happen. Paul Craig Roberts, I think, has put it well in articles in the past. The empire will run out of men and money, and once it runs out of both, then that's going to be the end of the show. Are we looking at a pre-revolutionary situation in the United States where this whole Trump thing is just a mirage, and we're maybe in 6 months, if we're in a global war, if all of a sudden the American dollar goes the way of the German currency during the Weimar Republic, will we then see a level of fighting in the streets in the United States?
Absolutely. Of course people will start fighting in the streets when they're fighting over bread. Of course they will. And that's what happens in every society. The U.S. Americans are not immune from being normal. So we need to protect it. We need to root for the U.S. success. We need to work for it. And a U.S. failure is not good for anybody. We cannot afford the U.S. to fail like this. So I'm not rooting for the failure of the U.S., but I'm saying it's going that way if they continue this path. And so we need to extract AIPAC and the Zionists out of the U.S. government, get them out of there somehow, some way. Americans, are you listening to this? Please, for your own sake, get them out of your Congress. Get them. No one talked about reform this election. We talked about egg prices. We talked about Kamala Harris's looks or stupidity or this or all this Panama Circus bullshit. Okay, the truth is, you need to clean up your act in the United States. You need to reform, and no one's talking about reforming the U.S. And there's no discussion with it whatsoever. And in fact, it's corruption at the nth degree. It's literally the most corrupt on planet Earth. I mean, folks, pay attention to what's going on here, you know?
And one of the amazing things, Johnny, as we get toward the end of the hour, is that I am unaware. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I could not bring myself to watch these debates on television. It just, I would have broken my television set. I would have but to my knowledge, I saw no significant interaction between the presidential candidates, and for that matter, the vice presidential candidates, over the fact that not all that many weeks ago, the National Defense Authorization Act, the version that has just been renewed in both houses of Congress, renews the American military draft. Are you folks listening out there? Take a look at this National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, and the re-establishment of it, or the refunding of it, the 2024 version of it, has re-established the draft, courtesy of both houses of the United States Congress. Folks, Johnny Punish, I think, has given us a good roadmap for the future here. I'll be adding to the roadmap for this show over the weekend, but take a great look at his autobiography and learn more about this fine gentleman.
Mark, you can reach me, Mark, at globalthinkerswithaz.com, globalthinkerswithaz.com. That's where I write now about the issues for people escaping the United States, what they call expats. I try to help them get out of the United States and find freedom in an unfree world. So that's what I'm doing right now as a project. You can find my music at punishstudios.com as well, okay?
See you next week. Check the roadmap for Johnny's contact information. Take care.
Well, hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.